I think it's safe to say that most, if not all of us, are very familiar with Dr. Seuss, the children's author, you know, the writer of The Cat in the Hat and Green Eggs and Ham and How the Grinch Stole Christmas. And the basis of our lesson tonight and where we're starting at is in a Dr. Seuss poem that may not be as familiar to us as some of those stories are, and it's very brief, so we'll read it, because the idea of me getting up here and trying to read all of The Cat in the Hat and fit that in time wouldn't work. But it's called The Zode and the Road, and it's a very short little poem, and I think that we'll be able to take some stuff from it. We'll read it first. It says, "Did I ever tell you about the young Zode who came to a sign at the fork of the road? He looked one way and the other way too. The Zode had to make up his mind what to do. Well, the Zode scratched his head and his chin and his pants and said to himself, 'I'll be taking a chance. If I go to place one, that place may be hot. So how will I know if I like it or not? On the other hand, though, I'll feel such a fool if I go to place two and find it's too cool. In that case, I may catch a little chill and turn blue. So place one may be best and not place two.' 'Play safe,' cried the Zode. 'I'll play safe. I'm no dunce. I'll simply start off to both places at once.' And that's how the Zode, who would not take a chance, went no place at all with a split in his pants." Obviously, it's a very tongue-in-cheek, funny poem, but if you think about it, it's kind of the way that life goes for some of us, and really for all of us, because the Zode here is faced with a choice. He can go one way, or he can go the other way. And he invents a third choice for himself, which is to go both ways, which in all reality results in going no ways. And that's a familiar concept to us. We have choices to make. And we're very familiar with this idea. And he struggled with his choice. Again, not an unfamiliar concept for us. He weighed the possible pros and cons. One of the smart things that he did, you know, one place may be too hot, one might be too cold. And we do that at times when we have decisions to make. We'll write out a list of pros and cons and positives and negatives and which way we should go. And then, after all of his thinking, he essentially decides to not make a choice, because by choosing both, he chooses to stay put. And the thing is that so many times, day after day, we're quite like the Zode. We can't make a choice. We can't make a decision. We can't decide which way to go. And the problem is that our life is one giant choice broken down into thousands, even millions, of smaller choices. If you truly think about it, because the purpose in this life is to choose what to do, which path you will take. Will you go to heaven or will you go to hell? And all of the other choices that we make lead to that large choice. So think of the choices we have to make in this life. They start early. You have to decide who you're going to be friends with. You get to choose your friends. You know, your family you get stuck with, and your friends you get to choose. And some people choose friends wisely, and some people choose friends poorly. In the end, as you grow, you get to choose who you date. And some people do a very good job in making those choices, and some people do a very poor job in making those choices. And then it's time to make career choices. And some people pick the right career, and some people pick the wrong career, and some people fall into a career and it works out. You know, I thought the whole time I was in college that, even though I was a business major, that I wanted to be a coach and a teacher. And then after, you know, sitting around with Mitchell and Chandler and Carson, thank goodness that didn't work out, because after hearing about dealing with parents and kids and stuff like that, that sounds miserable. So sometimes you just get lucky. But you have to make these choices as you go throughout life. And the list of choices goes on and on and on. But ultimately, each choice is going to come down to two words: right choice, wrong choice. There's no in-between. Now, there are times where the wrong choice is just not as good as the other choice. And there are times where the wrong choice is just blatantly the wrong choice. But for a little while tonight, what we want to do is study through the Scriptures and look at a few people and the choices they made. Some made the wrong choice, some made the right choice, and some, like the Zode, convinced themselves to make no choice. So let's start with the tough one. Let's start with the wrong choice. And for a little bit, I want us to think about it. Have we ever made the wrong choice? Have you ever made the wrong choice career-wise or job-wise and had to back up and punt and go in another direction? Have you ever made the wrong choice financially? Did you purchase something that was really out of your budget or was something that wasn't in your wheelhouse and you shouldn't have gone down that road? Did you date someone you should have stayed away from? Did you associate with friends that were poor choices for you? Sometimes it's more simple than that. Sometimes it's just you choose the wrong words. Or even you choose the right words, but you choose the wrong delivery. You know, sometimes you can say the right thing, but if it's as, you know, comfortable as a cactus, people don't want to hear it, and that's still the wrong choice. And if you've made the wrong choice, you're certainly not alone. That's kind of part of our MO as people, you know. And some people cling to poor decision making. They love it. You know, I've heard said before that some people would rather climb a tree and tell a lie, stand flat footed and tell the truth. Like they love poor decision making. But most people don't. Most people don't love to make poor decisions. It just sort of happens to them for one reason or another. And the idea of poor choices and making the wrong decision is found very early in the Bible, like Genesis 3, Adam and Eve. And Adam and Eve make a poor choice, and we're all very well aware of this. Starting in Genesis 3 and in verses 1 through 19, Eve is tricked by the serpent. She's tricked into eating from the tree, and then she shares with Adam, and he follows right along behind her. And in verse 13, Eve tells God she was deceived. And there's no indication that Adam and Eve, much like us, woke up that morning with a strong desire to just make a poor choice. They were tricked, and they blindly followed the path. But we also learn very early on that choices have consequences. The consequences for Adam and Eve were that they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, they introduced sin into the world, and ultimately, because of Adam and Eve, all of us will have to answer for the things that we do in this life. And all of that was made, and all of that came about because of a poor choice. And obviously, we can be deceived as well. People don't always show us their true colors. You know, business deals are made to look more enticing than what they really are. We get told one thing and someone does another. Obviously, we can be tricked. Adam and Eve were tricked, and we can be tricked. It's part of life. The problem is that we're not relieved of the consequences of our poor choices just because we were tricked, and Adam and Eve weren't either. But what are some other reasons that people would make poor choices? David made a poor choice. David made several poor choices in a row, starting in 2 Samuel chapter 11 and into verse 12. And David certainly wasn't tricked by anyone. Like there was no deception here. David rushed full well knowing what he was doing into a bad decision. You know, it says that David committed his sin with Bathsheba, and he knew it was wrong, and he made an attempt to cover it up. And when that didn't work, he made another poor choice to have Uriah killed, and his poor choices compounded on one another. And in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 15 through 19, we learn that because of David and Bathsheba's sin, the child they conceived together dies. And clearly this is a harsh and terrible consequence for their poor choices. But David wasn't tricked. In fact, you can say that David, in a way, made his poor choice for two completely different reasons. One being pleasure. Obviously, the scriptures tell us Bathsheba was a beautiful woman. And the second reason David made his poor choice was his power. He could. He was the king. He had the power to do the things that he did. He had the power to make things like this happen. And he took his power, and he tried to use his power to get away with what he had done. And obviously, sin can be pleasurable. If not, you know, what sway would it hold over us? And there are some in the world that clearly desire power. They enjoy the idea of being in charge, of people having to do the things that they say and the things that they want them to do, and they abuse that power, much as David did here. One final wrong choice we'll look at is Peter. In Matthew 26, Peter tells Jesus that he will never turn his back on him. He will follow him all the way, even unto his death, if that's what's required of him. And Jesus tells him, as we all know, that Peter will deny him three times. And then Matthew 26, starting in verses 69 through 75, and we'll turn and read those. And it says, "Now Peter sat outside in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him, saying, 'You also were with Jesus of Galilee.' But he denied it before them all, saying, 'I don't know what you are saying.' And when he had gone out to the gateway, another girl saw him and said to those who were there, 'This fellow was also with Jesus of Nazareth.' But again he denied it with an oath, 'I do not know the man.' And a little later, those who stood by came up and said to Peter, 'Surely you also are one of them, for your speech betrays you.' Then he began to curse and swear, saying, 'I do not know the man.' Immediately a rooster crowed, and Peter remembered the words of Jesus, who had said to him, 'Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times.' So he went out and wept bitterly." Peter makes this poor choice not once, not twice, but three times. And Peter's had nothing to do with deceit, and it had nothing to do with power, and it had nothing to do with pleasure. It had everything to do with fear and peer pressure. Whenever he saw what he believed was about to happen to Jesus and realized that Jesus was about to be taken away from him, and then realized that here he was and he was being accused of being a follower of Jesus, Peter makes his poor choice out of fear and out of the pressure to not be associated with Jesus. And this is why, you know, whenever you're younger and something that should carry on with us, you're always told, be careful where you go, be careful who you're around, be careful who you associate with, because at the time whenever the apostles should have stuck together and could have used each other the most, they spread, they run. And they make those poor choices out of fear. So you see three wrong choices for different reasons. Deception, pleasure, power, peer pressure, and fear can all play a part in our poor choices. But we also see here they never excuse us from the consequences. So now we want to look at the second choice option that the Zod creates, the no choice, the idea of, well, if I don't pick left and I don't pick right, maybe I can pick both. And maybe I can just ride the fence, and whenever I figure out which one's the right decision, I'll get lucky and I'll topple over that way, and it'll all work out for me. And do we ever try to make the no choice? Some of us do. Some of us are pretty good at let's just avoid the problem. Why address it when we can ignore it? That seems like a great option. Yeah, and some of us do that better than others. In Galatians, the second chapter, we find another story on Peter and his decision-making. Peter is going to be a consistent theme as we go tonight, in case you haven't noticed that yet. Paul, writing the letter of Galatians, says that, you know, whenever the Jews weren't around, Peter associated and ate with the Gentiles, and he was very comfortable with them, and he was a friend to them. But whenever the Jews were around, Peter distanced himself from the Gentiles and wanted to be seen as only being with the Jews. But it wasn't a deal to where Peter was bold enough to make a choice, really, in either direction. He wanted to ride the fence. He wanted to be right in the middle and everybody to be okay with him. And again, you see Peter's fear of people get to him, and the fear of what those people would think about him and say about him. And Paul didn't have that issue. You know, Paul says in verse 11 that he withstood Peter to the face because he was to be blamed. Paul sees the problem and Paul jumps on it. Peter needed to make a decision. He needed to get off the fence and stop trying to have it both ways. And Paul tells him so. And what Peter failed to realize was, by not making a decision, he was making a decision. He was choosing the Jews over the Gentiles. He was choosing the old way and being comfortable with the people that he knew over the people that God had told him to accept. And that's a very hypocritical path for Peter to take. We see that in Galatians, even Barnabas was carried away with what Peter was doing. Peter's influence led others to act like him, and Paul saw that he needed to put a stop to it. One more person who seemed to think he was trying to make no choice is, in Acts 26, we find Paul before King Agrippa. And Paul here gets the opportunity to preach the gospel to Agrippa. And what we want to focus on is whenever it's time for Agrippa to make his decision. Agrippa gets to make a choice. And in Acts 26, verse 28, and we'll read this because I think there's a lot to this one verse. Acts 26, verse 28. Then Agrippa said to Paul, "You almost persuade me to become a Christian." To me, some of the most haunting words in the New Testament are what Agrippa says right here. Agrippa essentially chooses to do nothing. He chooses to not follow the plan of salvation. He chooses to not believe in what Paul is teaching him. He chooses to not go down that path. And because he doesn't make that choice, he does make a choice. He makes the choice to be on the outside looking in. And much like the Zode, he feels like he's going nowhere at all, but we all know what choice that Agrippa has made here and what it will lead to and where he's truly headed. Agrippa didn't pick the path that would lead him to heaven, so in essence, Agrippa picked the path that would lead him to hell. Now then, one more choice type for us to look at, and this one's the more positive and upbeat, because I know so far, whenever you're making the wrong choice or no choice, it's a little negative. But there's one more choice, and that's the right choice. And we get the opportunity, and oftentimes we make the right choice. You know, people who have wonderful marriages are living with the results of good choices. People who are in a good financial situation are living with the results of good choices. And it's amazing to me, or it was amazing to me about me, as I was sitting here putting this on paper, when it's a poor choice, you know, I always write consequence. Whenever it's a good choice, I write result. Well, I guess we've put, you know, a very negative spin on consequence. But, you know, those that enjoy their careers are enjoying the result of some good choices that they've made. You know, and more importantly, those who enjoy spiritual freedom and the assurance of a home in heaven are enjoying the result of good choices that they've made. And for a little bit, let us look at some good choices, the right choice that were shown in the New Testament. First, let's look at Luke 23, starting in verse 39 through 43. Whenever you get there, you'll see it's kind of an odd place to feel like you're finding a right choice. And it says, "Then one of the criminals who were hanged blasphemed him, saying, 'If you are the Christ, save yourself and us.' But the other, answering, rebuked him, saying, 'Do you not even fear God, seeing you are under the same condemnation? And we indeed justly, for we receive the due reward of our deeds. But this man has done nothing wrong.' Then he said to Jesus, 'Lord, remember me when you come into your kingdom.' And Jesus said to him, 'Assuredly, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise.'" Told you it seemed like an odd place to find somebody making a right decision and making a right choice. But one thief continues his pattern of poor decision making, and the other turns it around and makes a right choice. And he chooses to believe that Jesus is who he says he is. He makes the right choice. Another right choice is found in Acts 9 by a man named Saul. Saul makes a right choice. Saul had been wreaking havoc on the church. And on the road to Damascus, he is blinded and left with a choice to turn his life around, use his zeal for the Lord's church, or continue down his path of destruction. And in verse 18, it says, "Immediately there fell from his eyes something like scales, and he received his sight and it at once, and he arose and was baptized." We see here Saul makes the right choice. He chooses to be baptized. He chooses to change his ways. He chooses to follow after Jesus and his teachings. And one last right choice that we want to look at brings us back to Peter. We've picked on Peter a couple times tonight. He's made a no choice and a wrong choice so far, but here Peter gets it right. In Acts 2, beginning in verse 14, Peter preaches the first gospel sermon. And this is Peter, the same Peter who at times is clearly plagued by fear of what other people will think about him. But on this day, he seems to put that to the side. He overcomes that. He makes the right choice. He makes the right decision. And so, what are the consequences or what are the results of these right choices? Well, the thief was told by Jesus that today he would be with him in paradise. Saul became Paul, the apostle whose primary focus was to take the gospel to the Gentiles, which is, you know, for the most part, me and you, and spread the saving message far and wide. And Peter spoke with such boldness that around 3,000 souls that heard him speak that day were baptized and forgiven of their sins. So you see, we're all faced with choices every single day. The question now then is, what type of choices are you making? What type of life are you living? What are you and I doing each and every single day? Are we getting it right? Are we getting it wrong? Are we trying to ride the fence? And essentially, because we can't make a decision, we wind up getting it wrong. See, Matthew 7, verses 13 through 14, we find here where Jesus has something very interesting that all of us need to hear. It says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate and difficult is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." Jesus says we're on one of two paths, and the two paths lead to very different ends. The wide path, the easy path, is the path paved by wrong choices that leads to a place called hell, and Jesus says many will find it. In Revelation, hell is described as having a lake of fire and brimstone where torment will last forever. In Matthew 25, Jesus describes it as an everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And the question becomes, why would anyone choose such a path? And the reality is, most people, as Sean pointed out a couple weeks ago, don't consciously choose to go to hell. They don't. They just don't make the choice to go to heaven. They're so concerned about what they have to give up to be on the narrow path. They're so concerned about the things of this life that they think they will have to change to be on the narrow path that leads to heaven, that they never make the choice. They never make the decision to get started. And by not making a choice, they make a choice. And that's the problem. They can't convince themselves that they need to make the choice to get on the narrow path, whether it's pleasure, power, fear, peer pressure, tricks, or something else, keeps them from fully buying into the narrow path, so they stay where they were, and they choose to do nothing. In Matthew, on separate occasions, Jesus uses trees to teach his disciples. And the first time, he tells them in Matthew 7:15 through 20, that any tree that does not produce good fruit will be cut down and thrown into the fire. The second time, in Matthew 21:18 through 19, he curses a fig tree for producing no fruit, and the tree dies. And in the book of James, we're told to be doers of the word and not hearers only. See, it's not enough to kind of make the decision. It's not enough to kind of get on the path. It's not enough to be like the Zode and to go, I want to be like Jesus, but I want to be like the world, because you do become like the Zode. You go nowhere and you accomplish nothing. And that's the choice we have to make. Thing is, there's the other path that's mentioned, the narrow path with the narrow gate that few will go in. But where does it lead? And that's the key. It leads to heaven, to an eternal home with God. Heaven is described as the great reward, a place with streets of gold and gates of pearl, and a place with no more sorrow, no more pain, and no more tears. So tonight, we each have a choice to make. Which path will you take? The wide path, the easy path that leads to eternal destruction, or the narrow path and the narrow gate that leads to eternal life? Don't trick yourself into waiting. Don't trick yourself into thinking you aren't ready to make a choice. Because by not making a choice, you are making a choice. You're choosing the wide path. And if you're on the wide path tonight, you don't have to be on the wide path any longer. You can change your course and change your direction. You can head down the narrow path that leads to heaven. You have to hear the word, believe the word, repent of your sins, confess that Jesus is the Son of God, and be baptized for the remission of your sins. If you've started down the narrow path but have gotten lost along the way, don't stay lost any longer. Don't stay on the wrong path any longer. None of us know where our paths end and where our eternity begins. Get back on track while you have the opportunity. If you need help getting on the right path, path that leads to heaven, we beg you that you would come forward while we stand and while we sing.